Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, balancing form and essence with Reiki master and host Phyllis Lei Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence. I have today with me Ned Wolf. I met Ned when he was living in Seattle, Washington, and a few years ago, he came to Australia to visit, and then I talked to him afterwards, and he said he was interested in moving to Australia. So now I'm interviewing him in Perth, where he's moved, and I think 4 years ago. So welcome, Ned, to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis. Lovely to see you here down under.
Yes, thank you. And this is a little bit of the world Reiki scene, I guess. You're moving around. And what brought you to Perth? What made you, I mean, what was your motivation to come here?
Well, in addition to it being just a lovely city to live in, I felt like the energy of the place called me and the land called me. And I figured if I didn't try it, I might never get the chance to again. And so I did it on a whim to see if I'd like it, and I've been here 4 years now and plan on staying as long as I can.
Wow, beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, great. So, Ned, you've been a Reiki student for a long time, and I'd like to know, let's start by exploring how you met Reiki. Like, how did you come to Reiki?
Well, that was so long ago, I have to recall what that was like. At the time, this was in the mid-80s, and at the time, I was interested in learning about energy healing. I didn't even know what Reiki was, and I was involved in a holistic health training program, and asked my instructor if we could find out about energy healing, and he told me about Reiki, and we tracked down a Reiki master who actually trained us all, the class, in the first level of Reiki. And so when I started my practice as a holistic health practitioner, I started offering Reiki to clients and thought that was all I'd ever do until a couple of years later I decided to get initiated as a second level practitioner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just loved that and thought that that was all I'd ever do. And then a couple of years later, I started getting some kind of internal crazy push to consider being a Reiki master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what year is this now?
Well, this was about 89 or 90 when I started getting the notion that I should be a Reiki master.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I spent a year, I knew that in the Usui system it was a $10,000 commitment to be a Reiki master, and it also was at least a year's worth of study. And I'm a very thrifty person and thought I might find a Reiki teacher who could give me a bargain rate. And so I spent a year interviewing other Reiki masters from other disciplines, other systems, and decided at the end of that year that really what I wanted to do was to find an Usui master. And maybe I'd get lucky and I could get a discount.
Great. Good story. Continue.
So I met Helen Haberle, who was in Seattle at the time and training people. And I liked her and thought that she'd be a good teacher to have. I told her that I was interested in looking for the bargain price for the third level training, and she told me very clearly that it was $10,000. And so I went away for a few days and thought about it. And I had the money in my checking account. It wasn't an issue of whether or not I had the money. It was just that I'm known to be a little tight with money.
Well, that's a wonderful admission, Dan.
So I went back to Helen and with my checkbook, and I wrote her out a check for $10,000. And as I handed it to her, there was a great sense of energy lifting, and I had the realization that you know, I was just holding on to some notion that I deserved some kind of discount, and as I gave her the check, I realized it was probably the best way I could have spent that money.
Wow.
And so, of course, I can be a little stubborn at times, and so I said to Helen, well, you know, Helen, I've worked very hard with Reiki, and I've done it a lot and worked with a lot of clients, and I really think that I should be initiated in something less than a year. And Helen just smiled at me and said, well, let's just trust Reiki and leave that up to Reiki. And from the day I gave her the check to the day I was initiated, it was 50 weeks. So Reiki gave me 2 weeks off for good behavior.
I bet that was amusing to Helen also.
Yes.
So, do you have any stories that come to mind about Helen at this point in your training, or things that, conversations you might have had?
Well, there are a lot of experiences I had with her, and I think I picked a very good teacher to initiate me as a Reiki master. We would meet over lunch probably every 2 or 3 weeks. She lived north of Seattle, and I lived in town, and so we'd get together and have lunch, and we'd talk about how my practice was going and what my life issues were at the time and how I was addressing questions of my own integrity and my own commitments and my own needs for support and those kinds of issues that I think are part of every master's growing. And she had a lot of wonderful stories to tell about her relationship with Takata. Mm-hmm. And she was very inspired by her relationship with your grandmother, and loved telling about them, and wrote a wonderful book about Takata's stories and Takata's Reiki practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I participated in a number of Reiki classes that Helen taught as her student, just to observe and learn how to teach classes. And those, the stories from Takata were featured a lot in her classes. And one of the things that I adopted from Helen in my own Reiki classes is that when people are working on each other and doing Reiki, I read to them from Helen's book about Takata's Reiki practice.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very lovely thing. The students all love it because they get to hear about how Takata dealt with people who had headaches and how Takata dealt with people who had incurable cancers and tumors, and Takata's wisdom about dealing with those things.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she had wonderful dietary suggestions about, you know, telling people who had chronic illnesses to get off the red meat and juice their watercress, and, you know, just lifestyle questions that were very wonderful to hear about, as well as a wide array of different health issues that Takata treated over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives the students in my classes a chance to hear a lot of different stories about how to use Reiki that they wouldn't otherwise be exposed to.
Right, right.
So I think that's one of the great gifts of my working with Helen, was that she really brought to me a very close appreciation for Takata's
uh-huh.
Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And I still use it all the time in my classes.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. I can't remember. I know that when I met Helen, it was, I think, just after my grandmother died. In December of 1980, and I knew that she had been her organizer on Orcas Island for many years. I'm not quite sure when she started, but there was this very interesting place on Orcas Island, the Outlook Inn, and the man who stayed there or ran it or owned it, or I can't remember what his relationship was with the Outlook Inn. But do you remember this man's name, who was a kind of psychic person, and he somehow connected with my grandmother and invited her for a presentation at the Outlook Inn, and that's how Helen met her, and then started to be the organizer for my grandmother.
I don't recall the name.
Oh, I wish I could remember this man's name. Well, anyway, it was a very interesting relationship, and I know that my grandmother, because Orcas Island is such a gorgeous place, spent a lot of time there with with Helen,
yes.
staying with her in her home.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So I think after she died, Helen really wanted to honor her teacher and make sure that her stories were kept alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a favorite Takata story? Or can you remember them just ad lib, or would that be?
I remember a number of them. Yes, and a lot of different favorites. One story that's very useful for people to hear is a story of a man she worked on who had very severe arthritis, and she treated this man 3 or 4 days a week for a number of weeks, and after a few weeks of Reiki treatments, he developed a swelling in his elbow that continued to get bigger and bigger until it finally burst, and Takata had been expecting that, and what was being released was a lot of excess calcium from his body that had been stored in his joints and contributing to his arthritis. So as the wound burst and drained all the calcium, as I recall, the story goes that she thought it looked like cottage cheese removed from his body. The wound healed up and it was fine. She kept treating him with Reiki and he completely healed himself of arthritis.
Oh, that's amazing. I don't think I've ever heard this story.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. I love telling that because it demonstrates what can happen with Reiki is the body's getting that energy and working on its own healing. It'll do amazing things just to get rid of the toxins that are there causing the problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And do you remember a timeline, like how long she treated this man, or was that in the story?
I had a sense that maybe he underwent treatments for 3 months or something about that, about a season's worth of time. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And another story of a man who'd been, this was in Hawaii in the early days when Takata was practicing, a man who'd been burned and was in a family where 3 or 4 of the women in the family also knew Reiki. So he got treatments over his entire body where he'd been burned immediately after the time he had been burned, except for they left one small area untreated so that he could tell the difference between having received Reiki on his burns and not having received. And that was the one area, the area that didn't get treated was the one area where scars remained after the burn, but otherwise he recovered from these burns without any scarring at all.
Uh-huh.
Another, memorable story about Reiki.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I remember that story. I remember her telling that. That's a great story, too.
Yeah.
Well, it's time for a station break. We'll be back after the station break with Ned. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Never before in the history of live radio have such illuminating revelations challenged everything we thought we knew about the hidden realms. This exceptional mystic, seer, and healer creates a truly amazing bridge across the chasm that has separated man for eons from the unseen worlds of mystery. Join host Al Mean for an extraordinary and enlightening hour by Walking Between the Worlds on Voice America's Seventh Wave Network. Walking Between the Worlds airs live every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore, or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearnings.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I have with me today Ned Wolf, who's formerly from Seattle, Washington, and he now lives in Perth. Well, the interesting thing, it's Perth, Western Australia, which has the same letters as WA. Well, that's kind of interesting.
Yes.
And I've known Ned for many, many years, and one of the things that I appreciate about Ned is that he was initiated by a master, Helen Haberle, who died some years ago. Do you remember how long? I'm not very good with the years.
I'd say years. Probably 7 or 8 years ago.
And she was a very old friend of my grandmother's, Hawaii Otakata, and organized many, many classes for her on Orcas Island. And it's nice just to have her be present in the Reiki community who's listening to the radio show. So I've asked Ned if he has another story about Hawaii Otakata, about Helen Haberle, and he said yes. So take it away, Ned.
One of the things, thank you. one of the things that Helen said to me as I was studying to be a Reiki master, she said, well, when you're ready, I'll be happy to initiate you anywhere you want to go in the world. I thought that was a very generous offer. And, of course, she was meaning for me to think about it and think about where would have a special feeling and a special energy that would have meaning for me. And so I thought about it for a few months. And I had grown up in the mountains of Colorado, and over the years of traveling through those mountains, I'd found a place called Wonder View, which was just west of the Front Range, kind of between Golden and Boulder in Colorado. And there was a pinnacle of rock there that required some climbing and some agility to get to the top of. But once you're at the top of this pinnacle of rock in Wonder View, you could see probably easily 80 miles to the west and see the Continental Divide in a row stretching from north to south of snow-covered peaks that was just a gorgeous view.
Wow.
And then when you look to the east, you could see over the whole Front Range all the way to the plains, and you could probably see 100 miles into eastern Colorado. And it was really a bird's-eye view of the plains joining the mountains and seeing all the way to the Continental Divide. Now, because it took a little bit of climbing to get up to the top of this place, I had a little trepidation about mentioning it to Helen, But I told her that this was a spot that I thought would, that really had very special energy, and I'd love to be initiated there. Helen didn't bat an eye. She said, fine, great, we'll go there. We'll initiate you there on this pinnacle of rock. And it came time for me to be initiated sometime. Well, as I recall, now I'm thinking about it, yes, it was in November, because there was snow on the ground and there was snow on these rocks. And as we're driving up to this place, when we needless to say, we have to drive through the mountains, and we're climbing and gaining an elevation, I'm getting a little nervous about whether Helen's really up to the task of climbing up to the top of this pinnacle. And she didn't bat an eye. We get out of the car, and she looks at what I'm talking about, and she doesn't bat an eye. She says, let's go. And there were several places climbing up where I reached down and helped her get over the rocks. But she was fabulous. She just kept climbing until we got to the top. When we got to the top of this pinnacle, she was as inspired by the view as I was. And there, flying, circling in the air above us, was a golden eagle, a bald eagle.
Wow.
Flying.
Beautiful.
Above us. And it was such a great indicator from Mother Nature that this was the place and this was the time for me to be initiated. And it was a very moving ceremony, and Helen brought her camera and took photos and gave me some later on. And I just thought that her spirit and her dedication were so wonderful that she would undertake that trek to the place that I thought was so special, and did it with such dignity and, you know, ease.
That's beautiful.
It was great.
Yeah, beautiful story. Thank you. So, I'm wondering, in your path then as a master, you taught in Seattle, and did you travel and teach at all anywhere else?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, I had students who hosted classes for me in Colorado in addition to Seattle, and those are the two places that mostly I taught I was in the States.
And now you're teaching here in Perth.
Yes, now I have classes here, and I had a very unique opportunity here in Perth, which I don't think you know about, Phyllis, and that is that several years ago, I got a call from Bandy Up Women's Prison to teach Reiki to inmates at the women's prison.
Oh, tell us about that.
And they got in my name because I was on a roster of Reiki teachers at one of the local schools, and they called me to see if I was willing to do it, and of course the idea of teaching in a women's prison appealed to me. I mean, you know, who knows? So I taught two classes there, and they had the guards were all responsible for who got enrolled into class. So I had to, once the first day occurred, and we had it over about a 6-week period of time where I came in once a week for 3 hours, and we'd learn a little more about Reiki and get a chance to practice on each other, and then there'd be an initiation that I'd do. And so the guards did all the selection to see who was going to be in the class, so once we had the first class, I had to find out who really understood what they were doing there and tell them about Reiki and what that meant. And one of the things that I had to get used to was the fact that at any time in the middle of a class or in the middle of an initiation, a guard could wander in and want one of the inmates out for who knows what reason.
Wow.
And they had complete control over the situation. I had to be willing to let them come in and take people out of the class or out of an initiation if I was going to teach there.
Uh-huh. Did that ever happen?
Yes, it did.
It did? Oh, gosh. How strange.
It was very... They took them out of classes. I had one of my earlier students standing outside the initiation room, and they were able to run interference for me so that they never actually interrupted an initiation.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
they did interrupt several classes with... I had no idea why students would be taken out of a class. But after realizing that it was going to happen with some frequency, I set the classes up so that people who missed material during one class could come back into the next class and cover that material again,
mm-hmm.
so they really didn't miss
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the most unusual part of it. I taught two separate classes there, and the people that were there were all very committed to it. They loved doing it. They got a lot out of it. And I haven't heard, the one thing I couldn't do was share with them how to get a hold of me. The prison wouldn't allow me to do that.
That's so, kind of odd, because surely they have a visitor's roster or something, no?
I don't know. They were doing it. They had some very strict rules about how I was to interact with students,
uh-huh.
which they claimed were for my own protection.
Uh-huh.
So
well, that's
and that was one of the rules
yeah.
is that I didn't give out any contact information.
Right.
So I haven't heard how these people did, but I did enjoy the opportunity to actually go into a prison and get a chance to teach and deal with the whole thing about living in a community where guards get to tell you what you're doing and when you're doing it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So how many women took the class at a time?
There were about 10 in each class.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so you said that you went in over a 6-week period?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very unusual kind of form for a class,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? So
mm-hmm.
how did that work out? I'm interested on how that worked out for you as a master to do one class and then wait a week or
right.
something and then do another one. Class
right.
that's kind
yes.
of stretched out. So
right.
how was that?
I just adapted to the situation. For me, the important thing was having the opportunity to teach Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, people had an opportunity to learn it. I didn't find that it was particularly difficult. After the first class was basically an introduction, so people had a chance to see what they're really getting into.
Mm-hmm.
After the second class, the class also included the first initiation. So then people had a chance to really work on each other in the week between classes,
mm-hmm.
and treat themselves as well as other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a whole interesting dynamic in a prison for people to now have this tool called Reiki, where they could offer something to each other.
Mm-hmm.
When they were stressed out or in pain or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought back very interesting stories about what it was like treating each other with Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, you know, this is a women's prison, there were little groups of people who would decide that they didn't like the Reiki people because they were too weird or whatever, and so you knew not to offer those people Reiki. And it's very interesting to see that kind of very tight-knit community
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
have the whole range of interaction and whole range of reaction to Reiki
mm-hmm.
that they got a chance to experience during that week between classes, and then they'd come back and tell me their stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it'd be fascinating to find out how they're doing now.
Yes.
Were they mostly long-term inmates?
Yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. My guess is most of them are still there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't go visit them.
Well, that's an interesting question. I think I probably could go visit them.
You just couldn't give out your information.
Just can't give out contact
information. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, time for another station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be right back.
Awakened media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Reiki treatments can be done almost anywhere. On the floor, on a bed, or even on the dining room table. But I certainly prefer giving and receiving treatments on my comfortable, lightweight Astrolite massage table. Contact us for more information at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Marissa, are you ready yet? I know you can hear me. You are not missing school again. Marissa! You trying to be a nobody or something? Let's go! All right then. Hit it. I know you can hear this. Hey guys, move closer. That's it. Girl, I am not leaving.
Hey, whatever it takes, don't let your friends drop out. A real friend can make all the difference.
Cut that noise, yo! I'm coming! Took you long enough. Thanks for the help, guys.
For more ways to help, go to OperationGraduation.com. A public service message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing broadcast each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Ned Wolf, and he's had some interesting experience here in Western Australia in a women's prison, teaching two classes. And during the break, we were just speaking about how interesting it would be for him to go back and see if the women are still using Reiki. Because the last class finished about a year and a half ago, I understand. So, it would be fascinating to see if their life in prison changed or if they, what happened to them.
Right. Well, I've always felt like prison was a great place for Reiki to be. Uh-huh. And of course, there's the one concern is that, that wardens have is, if we start promoting people doing hands-on healing with each other, then we're exposing them to the risks of violence more than we would otherwise be doing so. And of course, I can't imagine a Reiki practitioner going there, but it's an interesting thing. I have an interest in this, and many years ago tried to get a Reiki class going in the Monroe State Prison near Seattle. And I met with the warden and I met with their activities director and I took a couple of students of mine who'd been through first and second level Reiki, and we wrote up proposals, and they suggested that it was too weird an idea at the time. But maybe I could approach the director of corrections in Olympia, who was working in the governor's office. And so I did that, and I talked to people who were working in the governor's office, sent them my proposals, and phoned them and talked to them about how great it would be. My notion was that if you could just give a select group of inmates 6 months of Reiki, that their health would improve, their need to depend upon health care facilities within the prison would decline, and their rates of violence and antisocial behavior would decline as well. And you could measure it. And you could see that offering Reiki in prisons would be very cost-effective, and it'd be a great thing. And what are we doing in prisons anyway but helping people recover, it seems mm-hmm. to me. So why not have a healing practice there?
Uh-huh.
Well, I spent, I'm sure it was at least 2 years, trying to get this program going, and finally, in a final meeting with the warden, I just came right out and asked him, well, why is it that we can't do Reiki in your prison? And his very blunt reply was, well, we just don't want it. And he said it in a tone of voice like, and I don't ever want to see you cross my threshold again, Buster. So that was the end of that. Now, I think since then, that had to have been easily 10 years ago. It could have been 15 years ago. But since then, I think the attitudes toward Reiki in the world at large have been changing, and it's become much more accepted. And I think that my experience at Bandy Up is any indication. People in prisons are more open to that kind of thing. And I think that it could make a very real difference if we could spread it out more in the prison system.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know how they had the notion to have Reiki in this prison?
I have no idea how.
What motivated them?
No, other than the activities director knew about Reiki and started investigating to find a Reiki master and found my name and we were off and running.
Wow, amazing.
They interviewed me and, having an American accent here down under gets you places you wouldn't otherwise get.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, lots behind that one.
I don't know how else to explain it.
All right. Well, I'm wondering, Ned, if you have another story about one of your unusual classes.
Hmm.
Some place that you've taught.
Right now I'm teaching classes just from my home in Dianella, and I don't have any unusual stories about it. It's lovely. I'll tell you, I keep telling people this. Reiki, being trained in Reiki and being initiated as a master, was one of the most profound experiences of my life, because I'd go nowhere without Reiki. And in my travels and talking with people, as you know, like to talk about their ailments.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never listen to a conversation about people's ailments without at least telling them about Reiki and offering them the opportunity. And it's amazing that over the years how many more people know about it.
Mm-hmm. It's very different
yes.
now than it was, say, 20 years ago.
Yes. People know about it much more. They think that all Reiki seems to be the same, or they don't understand there are a lot of different approaches to it. But when I get a chance to work on someone and give them Reiki, if it's their first time they've received it, even though they may have heard about it for years, they're always amazed at how much different they feel when they get off the table.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a lovely thing to keep making available, and it's a lovely way to really connect with people on a very human, intimate level, where we really acknowledge that we're all part of the same family.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, if I may, I think one of the things that indigenous people come from a culture, and Aborigines come from a culture where when something was out of balance in a person's body, they would go into their community and they'd deal with it.
Right.
It was a natural part of their lives. And it's lovely to have that ability to make Reiki so available that people can start understanding that it doesn't have to be a big stressful event to engage in a healing process, they don't have to undergo all sorts of tests or waiting or all, you know, many things that people encounter in the healthcare systems these days when Reiki's so available and so effective.
So, I was just wondering if you felt that you're teaching Americans and teaching Australians, if you've noticed any difference in the two, or is
yes.
it just, yes?
Oh, yes. There's a difference.
Uh-huh.
There's a different language.
Uh-huh. Tell me about that.
One of the things that I learned in one of my first Reiki classes was that when people are not feeling well here down under, they say that they're feeling crook. Now, I didn't
yes.
know what crook meant when I first started, and so I would talk about people having a particular crookness. In my Reiki classes, I'd mention, well, you know, this person had a crookness in their arm. Because I thought crook was synonymous with sick, and of course, if you have sick, you have a sickness. Well, no, here you can be crook, but you don't have a crookness. You just crook. But no, there is a language difference. There is a perspective difference. It's a different culture, and even though we think we all speak English, we don't speak the same English.
Right.
And so it's an interesting and fun thing to be in a different culture and yet teaching Reiki. People are very gracious and generous here, and they love laughing at my misuse of the language and helping me learn how to speak Australian.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But in general, don't you think that people, I mean, it's what I have loved in teaching classes in different countries is that there is on the surface a kind of cultural difference, and then Reiki somehow permeates this covering or this difference, and then everyone slowly by the fourth class becomes the same.
Yes.
Would you say that?
I would say that's very true, that Reiki has a wonderful way of reaching into the common humanity that we all share.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very beautiful thing.
Uh-huh.
And my experience of completing a class and the kind of connection that I have with students and that they have with each other, that's exactly the same here as it is in the States. It's a very deep, lovely connection.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. Well, it's time for another station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back with Ned Wolf soon.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The law of attraction is very much in today's public awareness. In reality, it is not a new concept. Join Liana Carbone for Living Wisdom, the Art of Shamanism and Spirituality. Discover the roots of the law of attraction and go beyond its theories to manifest a life of balance and prosperity. Living Wisdom can be heard each Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network. Come join us to dream, learn, and heal.
Hey, how you doing? Educational videos, top quality, right here.
You'll never hear anyone selling education on the street. For with free family learning programs, you can get the education you need. Call 1-877-FAMLIT1 for information on free learning programs. 1-877-FAMLIT1.
Check it out, check it out. Your GED right here, guaranteed, ma. Come on, check it out.
Free family learning programs from the National Center for Family Literacy. Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Reiki practitioners everywhere prefer Astrolite massage tables because of optimum portability, leg clearance, easy setup, comfort, and quality. For 15 years, Rampa Enterprises, previously Magic Flute, has been shipping tables around the world to the global Reiki community.
Why wait any longer to get yours? Contact us now through our website at www.portablemassagetables.com and we'll help you select just the right table to fit your needs. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Ned Wolf, and we've been speaking about his experiences in teaching in a prison here in Western Australia and his attempt to teach in the United States in a prison. And I know that there are masters who have taught in prisons in other states, so it would be interesting to try and find those people and interview them. But now we're at a place where, what's next? And I would like, Ned, to ask you, where a lot of times people are asking me these questions like, where did Reiki come from? Do you feel like Reiki, the energy, is something that has always been used for healing? Do you feel like it's a different energy than, are there different energies, and how do you hold this energy of Reiki in your own self?
It's great. Good question. One of the things that I've done some study since I've been here is about the Aboriginal healing.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very tuned into energies as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a significant difference. In the work I've learned about Aboriginal healing, there is a deep concern for being susceptible to taking on negative or destructive energies while engaged in a process of healing with someone.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And yet, that's been one thing that I've always appreciated about the Reiki system of healing, is that I was taught that somehow, and I don't understand how, but somehow in the process of being initiated and trained in Reiki, that I am safe from being troubled by taking on other mm-hmm. energies, that mm-hmm. that healing energy of Reiki is flowing through me into a recipient or into my own body in a way that's safe for me, and I'm not going to take on other people's energies or illnesses. I don't have to worry about any of that. I can trust that I am safe and that my energy field remains safe and inviolate as I offer Reiki to others.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why that distinction, because I'm certainly clear that, you know, indigenous people for probably thousands upon thousands of years have used an energetic healing method very effectively. But one of the things that I appreciate about what Dr. Asui did and the very spiritual experience he had when he was first introduced to Reiki is that he had access to energy in a way that the practitioner needn't be concerned about that issue of taking on destructive or unpleasant energies. I appreciate that, and I think that's a very valuable part of what we do when we're giving Reiki.
Mm-hmm. That is an interesting point, because if we consider that Reiki is universal life energy, why wouldn't this be the same energy that the Aboriginals use
right.
for healing?
Yes.
That's your point.
And
then why should they be concerned about taking on...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yes. And I don't know the difference, but there is a difference. And I know that when I'm talking to Aboriginal healers, that they a lot of what they practice is to hold themselves safe from being invaded by unwanted energies.
Mm-hmm. So, but the difference, I think, is that we have this form of practice which has an initiation and a system of treatment that somehow is different from what I would call the raw use of Reiki without a system.
Right.
So one of the things that happened when I was early on in my teaching days in the early 1980s, I had a lot of people come to my classes who already healed by laying on of hands, but they were really looking for a system to practice.
Right.
And they found it in Reiki. I suppose that's also been true for you.
Yes, I've run into that a lot. Yes.
Yeah. And it's interesting how a system provides a kind of safety
yes.
for people, and I'm not quite sure how. Do you have any great theories about that?
The only theory I can come up with is something you've already mentioned, that I think somehow the initiation into the system energetically allows us to stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that it's by virtue of the fact that we were trained that way, that the strength of our own belief assures that that's true, whereas opposed to in the Aboriginal system, they were trained to believe that they can be violated, and so that belief then leaves them open to the possibility. I don't really know, but I like the fact that it's true that with Reiki, we don't have to worry about incoming energies and taking them on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So however we got there, I like the result.
Very pragmatic.
Okay.
And can you share what your most profound lesson has been in Reiki?
Well, I can tell you one of the top three.
Okay, one of the top three. If we have time, maybe we'll get to all three.
I would say that the most profound lesson that I have learned in my practice of Reiki is to treat myself first. And I don't know that a day goes by when I'm not treating myself with Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that a day goes by when I don't treat my house or treat the car or treat my food. And that has so enhanced the quality of my life that I can't imagine living without it.
Uh-huh.
To have that daily, day in and day out part of my practice where I'm giving myself Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And just one other thought about that. You know, I grew up in a very religious tradition, and it was considered selfish to be too concerned about yourself. And I certainly was trained to think that if I had an illness or an imbalance, my best way of trying to deal with it was ignore it and hope it goes away. And that's completely shifted. It's been a 180-degree shift. And I think that's what a very wonderful thing for people learning Reiki is to realize they have a tool that they can apply in treating themselves, and it so improves their own ability to respect themselves and to realize their sacredness and to love themselves that it's just an immeasurable gift in that one area alone.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we're at the end of our show, amazingly enough. Those are beautiful words to end with, Ned. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you, Phyllis, for asking.
No problem. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.